Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, June 30th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a question on the ballot this year isn't getting much attention, and the state fair needs workers. When Minnesotans go to vote this fall, they'll be deciding who should represent them in the state legislature. They'll also encounter a proposed constitutional amendment with implications for legislators' pay. So far, no organized campaign has emerged on either side, and it might stay that way, as Brian Baxt reports.
The silence surrounding the pay amendment is in stark contrast to the last time voters were asked to tinker with the state constitution. 4 years ago, millions of dollars were spent on both sides of the fight over proposals to ban gay marriage and require photo identification at the polls. Both measures failed. This November, voters will see this question on the ballot.
Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to remove state lawmakers' power to set their own salaries and instead establish an independent, citizens-only council to prescribe salaries of lawmakers?
Lawmakers drafted the referendum not long after the latest recommendations to boost their pay languished a few years ago. Legislator pay has been such a sticky subject that there hasn't been a change to the base salary of about $31,000 since 1999. State Senator Kent Eakin is one of the amendment's chief supporters, and he has a simple explanation for the stagnant salaries.
Legislators do not, like myself, we do not want to be voting on our pay. It feels wrong.
Yet the Twin Valley DFLer is also sensitive to how voters perceive the amendment before them.
It makes no comments whatsoever on what the pay should be. It's all about who should set it. And it's a citizens-only council. And could it lead to a pay increase? It's possible.
Republican Senator Tory Westrum of Elbow Lake opposed the bill that put the question on the ballot. He considers the wording to be deceptive.
I think the concern is that the voters will see it as a way to say no to pay raises or what they might perceive as pay raises for legislators. But if they vote for the amendment, they will actually be voting to put this in a third party's hand, making it probably easier for pay raises to go through.
If the amendment passes, a 16-member salary council would be formed to decide legislator pay every 2 years. The governor and Supreme Court Chief Justice would pick the members. Appointees would be split evenly between the two major parties. Legislators past and present and their spouses would be excluded, as would lobbyists, judges, and state employees. Other states have similar setups. A notable example is California, which established its Citizen Compensation Commission after a 1990 referendum. In its first 3 years, the panel left lawmaker pay unchanged. More often than not since, there have been compensation increases. But there have been pay cuts when the state was in fiscal straits. Legislators there earn $100,000 a year, tops in the nation. Rank-and-file Minnesota legislators are 19th in base pay among the 39 states that provide an annual salary, according to a survey this year by the National Conference of State Legislatures.
What I would ask constituents to think about, how long have you worked without one penny more? I served for 10 years, and I know the last time a pay increase happened in the legislature was before I got in there by a number of years.
That's Democratic Representative Kim Norton of Rochester. She's giving up her seat in the legislature. The financial hardship she endured during five terms is one reason why. When Norton first ran, she figured she'd scale back to part-time at her nonprofit job and it would all work out. But she left the job after her first session because she found it impossible to do both well. Norton got another outside job, but resigned that post after yet another late evening floor session caused her to miss a critical event. More recently, she says she had a tough time qualifying for better home mortgage terms because of her income and the lender's impression that her job was only temporary.
You don't run for legislator to make money. That should never be, and certainly in our state, isn't one of the reasons people would ever run for office. But you shouldn't be hurt financially when you're trying to serve your community either.
The volatile electoral mood has Norton and some others nervous about the measure's fate. But constitutional amendments have a strong track record, particularly in the last four decades, when 70% have prevailed. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Hey, nice cameo appearance there. In ninth grade, many students may be more focused on fitting into their new high school than thinking about graduating on time. But experts say success in ninth grade can be critical to whether or not a student finishes high school. A new effort in Minneapolis and St. Paul schools aims to keep a closer eye on students during that pivotal year. Solveig Wastvedt has the story.
What if one measure could help high schools figure out which students will graduate on time and which ones are off course? It might seem too good to be true, but that's the idea behind the new ninth grade on-track effort in Minneapolis and St. Paul schools. Minneapolis started a push last year to predict a student's likelihood of finishing ninth grade with enough credits to move on to 10th grade and without failing any core classes. Two Minneapolis schools piloted the system last year. The teachers got quarterly reports that showed student grades, attendance, and behavior data all in one place. The reports showed which students were set to finish the year on track and which ones needed more help. Minneapolis evaluation specialist Lizzie McNamara says teachers at Henry and Roosevelt High Schools could see the multiple measurements of student progress all in one place for the first time.
It also brought a different sort of intentionality to some of their meetings, in that it was like, we need to talk about these students and we need to leave this meeting with a plan for how we're going to support these students.
Next year, Minneapolis plans to bring teachers together in all its high schools to look at this on-track data. The Twin Cities Education Coalition Generation Next is working with Minneapolis on the project and also plans to help start the effort in St. Paul schools this fall. Teachers are no strangers to data, of course. In Minneapolis, measures of attendance, behavior, and grades have been accessible to teachers for years. But experts say focusing on ninth grade in particular can be helpful for boosting long-term outcomes like graduation rates. University of Chicago researcher David Johnson studied a 2007 Chicago Public Schools effort that the Twin Cities Project is based on. Johnson says ninth grade is important for a couple reasons.
When you fail courses in ninth grade and then consequently don't accumulate credits towards graduation, it tends to have a kind of snowball effect, right? You end up further and further behind the eight ball as time goes on.
He says in ninth grade, students are making the hard transition from middle school to high school. And aside from the logistical problems of repeating courses, class failures can also have a lasting psychological impact. Teens are figuring out their identities, which social groups they belong to, and what kind of students they are.
And if you think about what happens when you fail a course, you're receiving a very loud and clear message in a lot of ways that if it's not necessarily intended to tell you, you don't belong here, you can't succeed here. This is not a place for people like you. One way or another, whether a teacher means that or not, based on the way that they think about what giving that grade is, that may be what a student ultimately takes from it.
The Chicago study found that keeping students on track in ninth grade translated to higher high school graduation rates for those students. Minneapolis School's Lizzie McNamara hopes for the same benefit in Minneapolis, although it's too early to tell. She says as the effort expands next year, just delivering the new data to schools won't be enough. Teachers and staff will need time in the day to use those numbers and figure out how to get the students who are slipping back on the path to graduation.
The really important part of this whole process is the team meeting, that these people who know the students, who see the students on an individual basis and work with them, and who have relationships with them, that those people talk about the data to understand what the data really is telling them and then plan for interventions and supports based on that.
Because even the best data system is only as good as the people using it. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Less than 2 months before the start of the Minnesota State Fair, organizers are scrambling to fill thousands of jobs. The 12-day end-of-the-summer get-together requires a huge temporary labor force of ticket takers, food servers, trash haulers, and other workers. As Matt Sepik tells us, with low unemployment, vendors have to search for employees.
Ann Chesin is in her 18th year as a Minnesota State Fair vendor. Along with her husband and their sons, she operates the Chicago Dogs Stand in the Beer Garden. At full steam, 28 employees cook, serve, and take orders. Chesin and her family have been at this long enough to see both ups and downs in the economy. And with Minnesota's jobless rate holding steady at a low, seasonally adjusted 3.8%, She says finding temporary workers for the fair is becoming increasingly difficult.
Wherever you go, there's a help wanted sign.
Jezin is ready to hire anyone who's willing to put on an apron and a smile and sling hot dogs from August 25th through Labor Day. No previous employment, not a problem.
We're not necessarily looking for experience. We like to teach them. Sometimes people with experience have got their own ideas on how to do things.
Every year, the fair hires several thousand temporary workers. This summer, organizers are making an extra effort to find them. Last night, they held the first ever state fair job fair. Chezin and dozens of other vendors sat at folding tables inside the Progress Center as prospective employees walked up for interviews. Before the doors opened, hundreds of people had already queued up around the block, many of them teens eager to work. 17-year-old Josephine Johnson of St. Paul may be a perfect fit for the hot dog stand or any of the other positions. She's never had a job before, though she's filled out a lot of applications.
There's the whole experience paradox where you have to have experience for the job, but in order to get a job, you have to have experience. So there's just trying to break through that paradox and, like, get a first job.
16-year-old Tanazia Copeland walked into the Progress Center and walked out an hour later with a job at Blue Barn, a relatively new restaurant on the fairgrounds. She'll be serving up delicacies such as blue cheese corn fritters and chicken and waffle cones. Even with a robust job market, Copeland, who lives in Minneapolis, tells a similar employment tale. It's been tricky for people her age to find summer work.
It's really hard because a lot of jobs, they want you to be older or able to drive and stuff like that. And I mean, I can drive, but not legally, so it's kind of hard.
Economists say there's another paradox. Part-time positions that require little to no experience have been harder to fill as employers create more higher-paying full-time jobs. But at the same time, Oriane Casal with the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development says many of those who could fill these jobs aren't being hired. Teen unemployment has been stubbornly high.
There really are a lot of youth out there who are having a very difficult time for a variety of reasons finding employment. That, of course, makes these jobs very attractive. Get a little bit of work experience under your belt, makes it a lot easier next summer to find a job.
While it has been falling, the unemployment rate for 16 to 19-year-old Minnesotans was 7.6% in May. The hiring push at the state fair could put a small dent in that figure, at least for a short time in late August and early September. Fair spokesperson Brianna Schutte says the idea behind the job fair was to make the hiring process as smooth as possible.
We know that there's a lot of competition in the job market right now, and we wanted to create a fun atmosphere, making jobs very accessible and making it efficient to get jobs at the state fair for people.
Schutte says last night's event brought in around 500 new employees, but the fair still has a lot more hiring to do and will continue filling jobs throughout the summer. Most of the positions pay $9.50 or $10 an hour. People applying must be at least 16 and be able to work for all 12 days of the state fair. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.